As you can see from the screen, the title of our sermon this morning is Living Within Limits. And we've been thinking over the past few weeks about the ways that God blesses us, helps us, how we see with his eyes. And this morning we're going to think a little about the limitations which we have in our lives. Because, first of all, there was Superman. Superman with his amazing superpowers and lack of limitations, apart, of course, from kryptonite. And then there was Super Mum. I know that for many of you mums here, there's this massive expectation that you can be wonderful mothers always there for your children and career women always bringing the income in that your family needs to pay the mortgage, and always there for your husband and for your aging parents, and also enjoying a social life, keeping up with the latest fiction and what's on at the cinema, and having a good social life, and always smiling, always happy, and always full of energy. And it just ain't possible. And so Alison Pearson wrote her book, I Don't Know How She Does It, which I confess I haven't read, but I have read the reviews. And I know this is an incredible expectation that you have to be able to juggle all these things and still stay smiling and happy and in control. And in the church, we do it for Christians. You should be super Christian. I was interviewing for the job of vicar at, I think it's associate vicar's the job title, Emmanuel Tolworth recently. And you read through the job description and they're looking for the Archangel Gabriel, of course. What we want in the church is people who'll be totally committed to their workplace and sharing the gospel and sharing their faith in their workplace, totally committed to their families, spending time with, as I said earlier, either aging parents or with husband or with wife or looking after children, and sharing your faith with your neighbors down your street, getting to know them, reaching out to them, befriending them. Coming to all the church meetings that we have, not only our home group, but also all the prayer meetings, early in the morning and late in the evening, attending all the services, and always rejoicing at all things, at all times, having a smile on your face and being a super Christian. Well, we all know life ain't like that. How many of you are getting up at 5 to pray each morning? You know, all the kind of things that we have. And sometimes these expectations are ones that other people put on us. Oh, I noticed you weren't at the meeting last night. Was there a reason for that? Sometimes we put them on ourselves. Oh, I ought to pray harder. I ought to read my Bible more. I ought to tell more people about Jesus. I ought to get to church more. I'm such a useless Christian. And so many Christians live in condemnation because we aren't super Christian. We don't live up to the expectations that other people put upon us or that we put on ourselves. Well, this morning, I've got some good news for you. Sylvester was told at college that every sermon should have some good news in it. Well, I'm here to share 4 bits of good news with you today. And the first one is this, and the sort of underlying message of the whole sermon. God knows our limitations. Paul says, we have this treasure in jars of clay. God does not ask you to be super Christian. He just asks you to be a follower of Jesus. And he knows that we are frail human beings. How does he know that? Well, because he made us. He made us with the limitations that we have. And he doesn't ask us to be superhuman, let alone super Christian. I love Psalm 127. In vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat, for he grants sleep to those he loves. In other words, God does not ask you to rise at 5 to pray and stay at work till 11 o'clock at night, because he knows you need your sleep. He wants you to pray and to talk to him and have a relationship with him. He wants you to be committed to your work, whatever that may be, whether that may be out in the workplace or at home, however that work is. But he also wants you to have a work-life balance. Well, he wants you to have a life as well as work. And that's why we had a sermon on that very subject just a few weeks ago. Because I believe that's God's design for human beings, to have that right balance between life and work. God also wants us to have a right balance between life in church and life outside church. He doesn't want the church to take up so much of our lives, there's nothing left for our friends, our families, our leisure, and the rest of society. And that's why in this church, I try and work towards not being able to attend a church meeting every night and feeling guilty if you don't. That isn't the way it's meant to be. And I know for particularly people who are sort of PCC members and home group leaders that there are weeks when there's more than one meeting to go to. But generally, I do not want a church culture where every night is a church meeting, because you should be relaxing and enjoying life. And you should also be developing relationships outside the church with people who are not Christians. That's the way I believe God wants it. It's the way Jesus modeled it. And I don't want to create a culture in this church of meetings that you ought to go to. I've been in churches where the vicar tries to make you feel guilty if you haven't been to the prayer meeting. The temperature of the church is judged by the attendance at the prayer meeting. And judging by last night's meeting, well, my goodness, we are in a bad state. I don't know what excuse you have for not being there, but it better be a good one. You know, that's not the way to get people to prayer meetings. And what I want is to have meetings at this church, whether they be social meetings or sort of more overtly sort of religious meetings, spiritual meetings, that people say, oh, I'm really sorry I missed that because it sounded brilliant. I wish I'd been there. And so we don't stand at the front and say, there's an international cricket match, please come and support it because if you don't, you know, you'll let us all down. But there's going to be an international cricket match. It's going to be great fun. We're going to have a barbecue. We're going to have a good time. Come along and have fun. That, it seems to me, is the right way to go about it. And that is the culture I'd like us to have in this church. Now, occasionally, I'm not going to pretend, there are things where we say should and ought. We ought to support Oxygen, because they're doing a great work on our behalf. And if no one supports them, then that work will have to end. So there are some kind of shoulds and oughts around. But I hope it comes from the fact we see, wow, what Steve was sharing us with this morning, that sounds like a great work. I want to support that. I want to be part of that. Not, oh, I feel terribly guilty if I don't. So God knows our limitations, and he doesn't want us to suffer from hardening of the arteries, but actually to serve him out of gratitude and living a life that is a life. Jesus came to bring us life in all its fullness, not life that's burned out at the end of every day and every week. So God knows our limitations. That's good news this morning. Secondly, God knows our inadequacy. Often we sit there and we compare ourselves to other people and think, wow, well, I can't do what he does. And I'm not as good at doing that as she is. So God can't really use me. I haven't got many gifts at all. I don't know what I can contribute to the church. So I really don't have anything to offer at all. I'm sure you remember the story of Jesus wanting to feed 5,000 people. And he said to his disciples, you give them something to eat. And they said, well, we've only got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. It's not going to go very far in 5,000 people. And Jesus said, bring them here to me. And he took them, and he blessed them, and he broke them, and he shared them. And 5,000 men plus women plus children were fed. We have the little that we have. Jesus knows how little we have. He knows how little talent, how little time, how little money, whatever it is that we can offer. And he says, bring it here to me. Give me what you've got. Let's see what we can do with it. And he can multiply. He can make it go much, much further than we can ever imagine. Just to give a silly little human example that I came across. In 1987... American Airlines removed 1 olive from every salad served in first class. Over the course of a year, they saved $40,000. Just 1 olive, just from first class. That's what the world can do with 1 olive. God can take 5 loaves and 2 fishes and feed thousands. What can God do with your time, the time that you can give him? What can God do with the prayers that you bring to him? What can God do with the money that you can give him? Jesus looked at a woman who put two little copper coins, the equivalent of a few pence, into the offering box in the temple. And he said, that's an example, because she gave all that she could. It might not have been much, but God can use what she gave. Don't imagine that in your inadequacy, God can't use you. He takes our weakness, he takes our frailty, and he can make it something fantastic, because he knows our lack of faith. Jesus said, with faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, be thrown into the sea, and it'll happen. Now you see, Jesus is not saying, you've got to be super Christian. I want you to throw mountains around. Jesus isn't into earth moving in big ways like that. That's not his plan. It's a picture of saying, you've got so little faith. I know you've got so little faith, but so little faith can do great things. Tom Wright said, we don't need great faith. We need faith in a great God. If you don't remember anything else from this morning, just take that away. We don't need great faith, but we have a great God. So we just need faith in him. So one day Jesus was with his disciples, and a man came whose son was in a terrible state, his life ruined by the evil forces that were hurling him around and ruining his life. And Jesus said to the father, everything is possible for him who believes. And the boy's father said, well, I do believe, but I've got such small faith. Help me overcome my unbelief. That is all we need to cry out to God. My faith is as small as a mustard seed. It's tiny. I don't really have much faith. But God says, just give me that little bit of faith that you've got, and I can do amazing things. I can change the world with that small faith. In my last parish, in Worthing, a speaker came to the parish church to talk about the power of the Holy Spirit and the power of God. And as he prayed, he invited the Spirit to come, and all over the church, God started moving in people's lives and touching them and transforming them. And he called the team rector called my predecessor and his wife to come and pray for these people, and they didn't believe in this stuff. They didn't have any faith that God would do anything like this. And so they stood there and with a complete lack of faith, they said, okay, God, you know, do whatever you want to. And they saw people touched by the power of God and filled with the grace of God, and their lives transformed as they prayed with a complete lack of faith. And boy, after that, they had faith. God doesn't demand of us that we have huge faith before he can use us. He demands just a little tiny weeny bit of faith and willingness to step out and pray. And he will come in and transform. Eugene Peterson is one of the writers who has helped me enormously over the years, translator of The Message, written a lot for pastors. And I just learned this from him the other week. When Jesus had been raised from the dead, it says in Matthew 28, the 11 disciples went to Galilee. When they saw Jesus, they worshipped him, but some doubted. Note that, but some doubted. Then Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, and surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. I'd never noted this before, but Eugene Peterson says, Jesus doesn't say, okay, those of you with faith, go and make disciples of all nations. I'm with you always to the end of the age. Those of you who are doubting, can you come and have a word with me afterwards? That's what we would do, isn't it? We'd say, okay, those of you with faith, go out and preach the gospel. And the doubters, let's just have some remedial work at the end. No, Jesus says, if you have faith, if you doubt, all authority is given to me and I'm giving it to you. Go, preach, see lives change, baptize, see the Spirit come. Jesus treats them just the same. So if you're full of faith this morning and thinking, yes, I'm going to go for this, you're thinking, well, maybe, possibly, I could try. God sees you and loves you and wants to use you just the same. God knows our lack of faith. Isn't that good news? He knows our limitations. He knows our inadequacy. He knows our lack of faith, and he wants to use us and choose us just the same. And for some of us, it's a case of fear. God knows our fear. Well, but if I tried and if I prayed or if I stepped out, I don't know, it might not work. And nothing might happen. I'd look stupid and I might not keep it up. And oh, no. God knows our fears. Same time in Jesus' ministry, after the resurrection. Mark 16, the last verse of Mark's gospel says, "Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid." Jesus has just appeared to them in his resurrection glory, and they say, "Ugh," and nothing. Now, if the story ended there, you and I wouldn't be here today. But God didn't judge them, punish them, reject them for their fear and their uncertainty. He knew that just give them a few more hours, letting it sink in, they'd start telling the other disciples. They'd be the first witnesses to his glory. They'd be the ones who shared the good news through which directly you and I have benefited. Jesus didn't look on their fear and say, "Oh, can't use those women, let's get some guys instead." Jesus looked on their fears and said, "Give them a moment, they'll be okay." So God knows our fears. God knows our limitations. He knows we're not super Christian. He doesn't expect us to be super Christian. As Paul says, we have this treasure in jars of clay. Why? To show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We're hard-pressed on every side, but we're not crushed. We're perplexed, but we're not in despair. We're persecuted, but we're not abandoned. We're struck down, but we're not destroyed. You see, God knows our limitations, but he is not limited. God knows our fears. God knows our weakness. God knows our inadequacy. God knows our lack of faith, but he has unlimited resources that he can pour into us and so use us to bless the world, to change the world. Like those 120 people in that upper room, hiding away, praying on the day of Pentecost, and through them, the world was transformed forever. And there's more than 120 of us, I guess, or about 120. God could transform the world through us if we opened our lives to him and said, I know, Lord, I have my limitations. I know my weakness. I know my lack of faith. But hey, I've got a little bit of faith. That is just about as big as a mustard seed. Use me, I pray. And as we read in our reading at 9 o'clock this morning, God said to me, says Paul, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. For when I am weak, then I am strong." I had a cataract operation on Friday afternoon. And probably, wisely, I'll ask our GP friend after the service, I should be lying down at this moment. And at about 10 o'clock, I really wished I was lying down for the morning. But I just preached this, and I thought, okay, let's do it. "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Now, God doesn't call us to be stupid. I'm not going to go around lifting heavy things or driving because I've been told not to. But I do believe that God wanted me to stand here and preach this morning because he'd given me the message to say. God can use us despite our weakness, despite our frailties, despite our inadequacies. God can use us because he always has done. He's chosen weak, stammering people like Moses and Paul, that if you know, they both had, it's apparently in scripture, speech impediments. He chose them to be the greatest preachers that society has seen in their generations. God chooses the lacking in faith, like Thomas, who says, "Well, unless I see for myself, I can't believe that." And then says, "My Lord and my God," and goes out to change the world. God can use our weaknesses and do amazing things through us. Because we don't need great faith. We just need faith in a great God. Would you please stand and let me close in prayer?